Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
This morning's scripture reading is going to be taken from John chapter 6. We'll be reading verses 5 through 14. John chapter 6, verses 5 through 14. And I'll be reading from the NIV version. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, 8 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each one to have a bite." Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "Here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many?" And Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted." So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. After the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did, they began to say, "Surely this is the prophet who is to come into the world."
If you haven't already turned there, I'd invite you to turn to John chapter 6 as we continue our series of signs of life in the Gospel of John. We are in the midst of a busy month. I know that the fall break holiday has many of our members traveling. We want to continue to be prayerful about them. And we also want to be praying for events we have coming up for our Harvest Sunday that's coming up on the 27th. Let's continue to pray that there will be people that we can reach, that we can bring not only to worship, but also we want to emphasize everyone staying for class and getting involved and plugged in a class. We also have Trunk or Treat coming up, and you may have noticed that in the area right around here, there are a couple of bins for candy for Trunk or Treat. We don't want to run out of candy again, and we've got 2 bins, and I think a very creative way to motivate people for donating candy. And all I'll say is it's college football season, and if you look out there and see some of the signs above the bins, you might be a little more motivated to fill up one particular bin with candy. Either way you look at it, we are looking forward to that. All kinds of opportunities God has given us to serve Him. When we think of images, bread is a powerful image. You probably have favorite memories about either kinds of bread or baking bread. It may be something that a family member was famous for preparing or famous for bringing to a certain occasion, a get-together. Catherine grew up in Lebanon, which is the home of Cracker Barrel. It's also the home of the company that makes the bread used in Cracker Barrel. And I can't think of a better loaf of bread than that sourdough bread that they use there. It's just incredible. You can eat 3 or 4 pieces and then you look down at it and you've eaten half of the loaf of bread. I mean, it's just that good. Bread is a powerful image. And even when we think of sustenance, we think about having bread. We think about bread and water as a basic diet. Or even when Jesus is in the wilderness, we remember that one of the temptations, Satan asked him, tempted him to turn the stones into bread. Bread gives life. That's something that cuts across cultures. The idea of bread being life-giving and life-sustaining. And so when we think of that image, that powerful image of bread, we're going to see in chapter 6 of John's Gospel, John do something that we see many times. By inspiration, John is going to take a miracle Jesus performs, and then he's going to take a physical concept and lay that down by a spiritual concept. In other words, we're going to see a miracle, and then later in the chapter, we're going to see some teaching where Jesus takes the image of bread and applies it in a very powerful way. And so we'll be looking at those two parts of John 6 this morning. Next week, we're going to see what happens when Jesus walks on the water. That's kind of in the middle of these two sections. But this morning, I want us to consider what it would be like to be one of the apostles, and you have such a crowd that's following Jesus. People are wanting to hear what he says. You're there, you're in a deserted place, and now you have to feed thousands of people. The Greek term here is clear when describing men, using the word for men, which would have indicated adult males. It's not a general term. And so that's not counting the women and children who would have been there. And depending on what estimates you use, you could have 15,000 people, including women and children, up to even 20 or 25,000. You have thousands. I mean, 5,000 would be enough, but you've got thousands of people that are here, and the apostles are saying, wait a minute, there's no place for everyone to eat. I don't know if you've been in a situation where you've been in charge of a meal or in charge of an event, and you've run out of food. I've been in those situations before. And we live in a society where it's so easy to take care of that problem. All you'd have to do is run down to get a pizza or go through a drive-thru and order some extra food. And it might take 10 or 15, even 20 minutes if it's a large group. And it might take some money, but you can handle that. This is a time before you have fast food places to eat. You can't just pull off the interstate at McDonald's or Taco Bell and grab something to eat. When you think about the ancient world and meals, meals took a lot of time. And if you ate a meal, it was because it was something that you had grown or something that you had caught, a fish you'd caught or cattle that you'd raised. I mean, meals were something that had to be planned out. And now you've got thousands of people and they're looking around saying, where is the food going to come from? And as John Michael read for us, did you notice that when Jesus asked Philip what they were going to do, Jesus already knew what he was planning to do. He said this to test him. It seems to me that Jesus is making it clear he had a plan and there's something he wanted his followers to learn. There was a lesson there. And so this morning, I hope as we look at this situation in Jesus' ministry, as we look at this sign that he performs, we can learn something as well. I think there are a few things we see very clearly. But when we consider the enormity of the situation here, I think we can tell that God can meet any need, no matter how big it might be. This would have been an overwhelming need. This would have been shocking for them to try to imagine, how could we be responsible? In fact, in Luke's account of this miracle, they just suggest that Jesus sends everybody away into the surrounding areas so that they could go and that they could find a place to eat, maybe a lodge somewhere that they could stay. They just don't know what they're going to be able to do to feed all of these different people. It's easy to be overwhelmed by circumstances. It's easy to think of our own resources in comparison to what's around us and to doubt that there's anything that could ever be different. But what's fascinating about this situation is while this might be the first time the apostles were looking for food in the middle of nowhere, this is not the first time God had provided food in the middle of nowhere for thousands of people. In the book of Exodus, God does that all throughout. Manna, every day except for Sabbath day, manna comes from heaven, and even then God provides enough that they don't have to go out and pick up manna on the Sabbath day. There was even some expectation among the Jews waiting for the Messiah that the Messiah would be sort of like Moses, who led the people out of Egypt and through whom God led when he had the manna that came down. There's even an old Jewish commentary in Exodus chapter 16 that says when the second Redeemer comes, he will bring down manna like the first Redeemer. There's the idea that the Messiah was going to come and have this same kind of ability. So in a way, Jesus is doing what Moses had done. And God is feeding the people in the middle of nowhere. But did you know that's not even the only time in the Old Testament we read about that? If we fast forward to the book of 2 Kings, we find out this takes place with Elisha in 2 Kings chapter 4. When a man comes down from Baal Shalishah bringing the man of God bread of the first fruits, 20 loaves of barley and fresh ears of grain in his sack, and Elisha said, give to the men that they may eat. But his servant said, how can I set this before 100 men? Here you've got 100 men that are going to be fed with 20 loaves of barley and fresh ears of grain. And his servant says, well, how can I do this before 100 men? It reminds us of what Andrew says to Jesus when he brings the boys lunch and he says, "What is this for so many?" It's that same sort of mindset. This is an overwhelming need. How am I going to meet it? And then Elisha repeated, "Give them to the men that they may eat. For thus says the Lord, they shall eat and have some left." So he set it before them and they ate and had some left according to the word of the Lord. It's interesting to see the parallels here, isn't it? A servant who says, "I don't know if this is going to work. What are we going to be able to do?" And God says, "Oh, they'll have plenty, and they'll even have some left over." And we realize after the end of the miracle in John chapter 6, they had 12 baskets left over. Now, some people have wanted to attach some symbolism to that. And why were there 12 baskets? And why did it happen this way? I think we're just wanting to remind ourselves when we think of these baskets of leftovers that there was plenty, that here was a huge need, and God had so much power that He could meet that need and people could have food left over. I got the privilege a few weeks ago of spending some time talking to Elsie Hufford. She and her husband, Everett Hufford, a senior, worked in the mission field for many years, among other ministry fields in their life, and they spent some time in Jerusalem as missionaries. And one of the things she said they learned very quickly is when you were invited into someone's home and they gave you some food to eat, American values and values in that area of the Middle East are different. The American values are when you sit down and you're given a plate of food, what are you expected to do? Especially if you want dessert. You're expected to clean your plate. I mean, that's just naturally what we're trained to do. But over there, she said, they thought they were being very respectful when someone would bring out food and they'd clean their plate and they'd eat it all, even if they didn't really like it. They would eat it to try to be respectful. But in that culture, when a host lays out food and you eat it all, the host thinks you're still hungry. And so the host goes back and fills your plate up and brings it out again. And so if you're determined to clean your plate and a host is determined to show hospitality, this could go on for a long time. And they found out very quickly that what you did to signal that you were done is you left just a little bit on your plate. And having just a little bit left on your plate would tell the host, "Okay, you've eaten enough, you're full, and now we can move on." Just an interesting cultural difference. You know, and I've thought that would have made my childhood a lot easier personally if I could have convinced my parents that when I leave green beans on the plate, it just means I'm full. There's nothing else you have to deal with. You know, we have differences in culture. What we see here with 12 leftover baskets is the people were full. They had more than enough to eat. And so you have this incredible problem, and God's power is not only large enough to meet the need, it's large enough to do more than meet the need. And so I think about the issues I face in my life. It's so easy to be overwhelmed. And we're so self-sufficient. We want to handle everything ourselves. And we look at what we have around us, and all we can see is our environment and the constraints of our environment, and we want to get things done. I mentioned in our class Wednesday night, I don't know if you're like this. I can walk into a store looking for something, and someone will come up to me whose job it is to help customers find things and say, "Can I help you with anything?" And I'll say, "No, I'm fine. I really need help." But for whatever reason, I'll say, "No, I can handle this. You know, I can go in this, I can find what I need. I could get it done much more quickly if I'd let somebody help me." But we want to be self-sufficient. And I wonder how many times that happens with issues in our own spiritual lives. We're facing a problem and we want to be self-sufficient. So we figure out, okay, here's how we're going to handle this. Here's what I'm going to do. Here are the decisions I'm going to make. And if it's a situation dealing with finances, I'm going to handle this myself and I'm not going to spend time in prayer. Or if it's a decision with a problem at home in the family, well, here's what we're going to do and here's the plan of attack I'm going to have, and I don't think to involve God, even though God's resources are much greater than any problem I'll ever face. I don't know where you are in life this morning, but I can tell you, no matter what problem you're facing, we serve a God who's bigger than that problem. I can't promise you that I know how things are all going to work out. I can't promise you that I can predict the future and here's what God is going to do or what He's not going to do. But I do know that our God is bigger than any problem that we face. And I think that's good news. It's good news for us to remember. God can meet any needs, no matter how big they might be or overpowering they might be. And God can use any resources, no matter how small they might be. No matter how little or frail my abilities might seem, God can take that and can do something powerfully with it. When we look at the text in John chapter 6 in verse 8, one of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many?" It's almost as if Andrew is pointing out this boy's lunch and just saying, "Here's what we have, but how in the world could this feed so many people?" Now, I know we have some pictures on the screen, and we usually think of fish, and maybe we picture big fish, and maybe we picture big loaves of bread. But if you're thinking about a lunch that this boy had, the language used in the text seems to indicate that the fish would have been about like sardines. These would have been almost like a condiment you would put on a piece of bread. And even the piece of bread, these are not big loaves. This would have been a more traditional, maybe pita-like bread, maybe even the size of what we would think of as crackers. You'd have crackers and sardines. I mean, this is a very frail snack. This is not what we'd think of as a big lunch that's filled with all kinds of goodies. This is just a little bit to get by. And that's what they had for thousands of people. And it's incredible to just imagine what it would be like to be Andrew and say, "Well, here's what we have. But there's no way this is going to be able to feed everyone. What could Jesus do with a few sardines, a few little pieces of bread?" We tend to think in terms of our own resources. What can I accomplish? And oftentimes we're very hard on ourselves. And so if someone asks if we want to get involved in ministry, we tend to think, "Well, I'm not really good in this area. I know you've asked me to do this, but I really don't have the talent or ability. I've always wished I could do this, but I don't know if I can really handle that." And we're so hard on ourselves, and we see what we have is so frail, we forget that if we put it in the hands of God, God can do incredible things with those talents and abilities. Can you imagine what it would be like to be this little boy who's standing before Jesus, and he has to give Jesus all the food that he has with him? I mean, evidently, there weren't many other people that had the foresight to bring some food with them. And so here's this boy, and this is all he's got. He's hungry, too. And he has to put that in the hands of Jesus. There's something powerful in that imagery. There's something powerful in taking everything I have and putting it in the hands of God. God won't take that from me. He won't extract it from me without me being willing and serving Him. But when I put it in the hands of God, incredible things would happen. And this boy might have thought, if I give him my food, I might just have to be hungry today. But he was able to eat and be filled just like everyone else was. The key was putting it in God's hands. I think that also brings something home when we think about the way God uses our resources. We have been very blessed as a congregation to see God work in some incredible ways over the years. There have been great things that have happened because of the work and the dedication of you and of members of this church who have come before us and who have worked hard and just done incredible things. And when we see that happen, we give the glory to God because we know that He's the one who took our resources and used them to accomplish an incredible purpose, no matter how small they might be. And Jesus takes the bread. And just notice, sort of on a side note, what He does as He takes the loaves. And in verse 11, Jesus then took the loaves, the bread, when He'd given thanks, He distributed them to those who were seated, and so also the fish as much as they wanted. You may know this is the only miracle other than the resurrection itself that we see in all 4 Gospels. And you have this process of Jesus taking the bread and giving thanks and breaking it and giving it. And there's just such an incredible parallel when we see the life of Jesus. He's going to go on in this chapter to describe Himself as the bread of life. And remember, this happened before the crucifixion, and this happened before the Lord's Supper was instituted. But as we think about the Lord's Supper, just think back on the action Jesus took here. It would have been very common for those in a Jewish family to take the bread, to give thanks for it, to break it, and to give it. But isn't that what Jesus, the bread of life, does with Himself? He takes Himself to Jerusalem. He's set to go to Jerusalem. In the garden, He prays, and in His prayer, there's a willingness to do the will of the Father. And while none of his bones are broken on the cross, his body is pierced. His skin is broken and pierced by whips and by nails, and he gives his body for us. Isn't that incredible? What Jesus is willing to give for us. Maybe that's something we can reflect on this morning as we take communion, to be reminded of the bread of life, which leads to the third lesson I think we can gain from the text this morning, and that is that when we consider God's resources, he can satisfy our spiritual hunger, no matter how desperate we may be. Let's scan down a little bit further in this chapter as the people come to Jesus, and again, they're seeking a sign. And Jesus is trying to point them beyond the sign to the purpose of his teaching. You may remember that as we've looked through the book of John, John tells us at the end of his gospel that there wouldn't be room for all the books that could be written about what Jesus did and what he said and what he taught, but these were recorded so we might believe. And so through inspiration, John has selected very carefully some miracles that should teach us something. Jesus wasn't performing miracles just to wow an audience, just to say, isn't this incredible what I can do? There's a lesson there. And so he's upset that they're coming to him and they're just looking for signs. And so let's pick up in verse 28 of what they say to him. They say, what must we do to be doing the works of God? Jesus answered them, this is the work of God, that you believe in him who he has sent. So they said to him, then what sign do you do so that we may see and believe you? What work do you perform? Our fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. They said to him, sir, give us this bread always. Now this is a pattern we see over and over again in Jesus' ministry. We have people thinking physically, and Jesus is trying to draw them into a spiritual way of thinking. And he says, there's a living bread that comes down from heaven. And almost like what we see in John chapter 4, a couple of chapters earlier, where the woman at the well hears about this living water, and she says, oh, I want that all the time. Give me some of that water. Here they're saying, give us some of this bread. And so look at what Jesus says in verse 35. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. Jesus is trying to point them to something that they only had a picture of. They had a picture of bread from heaven, and Jesus is saying, you are looking at the bread sent from the Father. Just look at how he describes himself in this passage. He describes himself, the bread of heaven, as the one who comes down from heaven, the one who gives life to the world. And isn't that what Jesus did, what Jesus does for us? The true bread of life. Now, it was hard for them to understand it. This teaching was something that was difficult for them to wrap their minds around. And even later on, in the early church, when they would talk about the body of Christ, and when it came to the Lord's Supper, taking the body of Christ, and that even had some that were making accusations of cannibalism to these early Christians. They're saying, what are they talking about? But that was missing the point. There was something spiritual that was happening. And so Jesus says he is the bread of life. We use terms like that sometimes as we think about eating things, meaning accepting something. Someone tells you a story that's difficult to believe. You say that's hard to swallow. I mean, we kind of have a sense of that. I like what David Smith wrote about the way in which this would be understood. He said, such language would sound less strange in Jewish than in modern ears, since in the scriptures and in rabbinical literature, the teaching of the rabbis alike, instruction is called bread, and those who absorb it are said to eat it. And so it would have been a little easier for them to understand this image of Jesus being the bread of life, that it wasn't physical, there was something figurative that was taking place there. He was the bread from heaven. What we consume matters. And God can satisfy our spiritual hungers, no matter how desperate we might be. You may have heard the story about a hiker named Chris McCandless, whose journey into the Alaskan wilderness in 1992 was made into a book called Into the Wild. He left in April of 1992, and he took very little with him. And as he was spending time there, his body was discovered just a few months later. And in the book, Into the Wild, author John Krakauer makes a hypothesis about what he thinks caused the death of Chris McCandless. But in last month's issue of the New Yorker, they had sort of a more complete description of what they think would have caused his death. And I bring it up because they said his campsite was discovered and there was a note that was left there that said he was in trouble and he was going to search for food. And what he was eating were seeds, wild potato seeds from that area. Now, if you just had some wild potato seeds among other nutrients and other sources of food, it wouldn't be a problem. But if all you ate were those seeds, there were some chemicals in there that would cause a sort of paralysis. They would almost paralyze you. And so in the article, they describe someone who is so hungry, searching for food, eating something, doing what all of us would do who were desperate, eating something that was hurting him. It was causing a paralysis. Now, why would we bring that up? I bring that up because we live in a world where all of us are spiritually hungry. And we can look around and we can find out what some people are consuming. We can find out what some people are putting in their bodies, either physically or putting in their minds. And it could be very easy for me to experience a struggle and say, you know what, I'm going to take care of this spiritual hunger. And so I wonder what all life is about. I'm just going to fill my life with activity. And I'm going to do one thing after another. And I'm going to find my meaning. And I'm going to find my purpose and achievement and accomplishment. And I'm never going to think about the deeper issues of life. And if I'm doing that, I'm feeding myself something, but it's not helping me. In fact, it's hurting me. I'll be exhausted and burnt out. And I still won't know why I'm here. Or maybe there's an addiction that I turn to. And I try to find meaning or enjoyment of life in a substance. Or I try to find it in alcohol or whatever it is that I could be addicted to. And I try to find my meaning there. And I'm putting something in my body. I'm taking something in. I'm consuming something. But it's not helping. It's hurting. There's a deep spiritual hunger that all of us have. And only God can satisfy that in a way that helps and doesn't hurt. No matter how large our needs may be, no matter how desperate our spiritual hunger may be, only God can give us a satisfaction that's going to be lasting and that's going to be meaningful. There's a part when we're looking at the different Gospels and in Mark where Mark describes what's taking place among the apostles later after the loaves when they're on the boat. And the storm has kicked up and all of a sudden they find out Jesus has power over the storm and here he is. And we know from reading the Gospels about Jesus being able to calm the storm and walk on water. They're learning that. And there's a little note there where Mark says they had not learned the lesson of the loaves. There was a lesson to be learned there. And they hadn't yet learned it. I hope we can learn that. I hope we can learn about the spiritual purpose that Jesus had. John tells us that the people wanted to make Jesus king by force. And doesn't that sound like a good idea if you're trying to think of a physical kingdom? And here you have a man who can already heal people, you know that, and he's able to feed everybody in the middle of nowhere. This is someone you could follow into battle. But Mark's account also tells us something else very interesting. Mark tells us that when Jesus saw the people in chapter 6 and verse 34, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. He didn't say they were like an army without a general. He said they were like sheep without a shepherd. There was something spiritual there. Jesus wanted them to have the bread of life. He wasn't thinking about physical kingdoms, but spiritual ones. No matter how big the need might be, no matter how small the resources might be, no matter how desperately we're hungering for something more, only God can satisfy those needs. And so this morning we have to ask ourselves a few questions. We have to ask ourselves, is there a need in our life? Is there something happening in my life that is so big and so overwhelming, and yet I haven't yet invited God to be part of the process? I haven't brought it to Him in prayer. I haven't reflected on what God would have me do. We can change that today. Maybe I feel like I've just got small resources and I haven't really plugged in to serving God for that reason. That can start today. It may be that we just need to know the bread of life. That can also begin today. Charles Allen wrote a book years ago called God's Psychiatry, where he described the treatment and the care of orphans in post-World War II Europe. As you can imagine, with the war and the difficult terrible conflicts that took place, there were a lot of children left without parents. And so they were taken in to an orphanage, and they were taken care of, and they were fed. They had been malnourished, and they'd gone from one place to another. And no matter how well they took care of them, they had trouble sleeping at night. And they would sleep fitfully, and they would be nervous looking around for what was happening next. And that continued until they tried an idea by one individual, and they continued to use it. They gave each orphan, when he or she went to bed, a piece of bread. Not to eat, but a piece of bread to hold on to. You see, they'd been in so many difficult situations, they weren't sure what was going to happen next. They didn't know what the next day held, but having that bread in their hand let them know they'd have food the next day. That comforted them. They were able to get some sleep. None of us have to leave here this morning, and none of us have to go to bed tonight without holding on to the bread of life, the only thing that will give us true satisfaction, that will give us assurance and peace in difficult situations. So be holding on to the bread of life. If you need to do that, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, if you need to come back to Him and decide that you have needs that need to be made known and you need prayers and encouragement, if we can help you in any way, please come as we stand and as we sing together.